Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Nobody cared about this guy. And then they make a whole movie out of him, yeah. You know?
Welcome to Wreckatopia, a happy home for recommended movies, TV shows, music, video games, foodstuffs, and more from three people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, and Aaron Dyson.
Yeah, it's going good. Moving the puck well. It's just a little different playing with them, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how to explain it. We just seem to always find each other at the end of the ice and make things happen.
Yeah, pass, shoot, score.
Pass, shoot,
and score.
Hello, everybody. It's Wreckatopia, episode 147. I'm Chris Atkinson, joined by Jeremy Scott.
Hello!
And we're also joined by Aaron Dyser.
Hi, ho, Puckerinos.
Today, not putting something up in the camera to confuse and distort and all the things that
Look,
Aaron Dyser likes
I heard
to do.
some honesty in your voice last week that was bothering you, and I want to be a good friend, Chris, and so I instead am derailing the podcast by not doing it this week.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing it now. That.
I know. I'm actually totally fine with it. I just like to point it out every time that it happens so that people will know if I'm stumbling over my words, there's a reason for it. You know, I'm not afraid to look dumb, Aaron. I'm not afraid to look dumb. All right. And once again, welcome chat to come in here who are here to watch us talk about movies on a Tuesday, including this one named Monday who has picked out a favorite person on the writing team, and now I'm like, who's the favorite person? Who's the favorite person you're talking about? We have today's our big recommend is going to be Miracle, can't wait to talk about that. And let's get into our small recommends.
It's no big deal.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
Jeremy.
I will go. I'm going to give you a small recommend that my brother gave me. My wife and I watched this Sunday. And I'm going to do you a courtesy my brother did not do for me and tell you that this shit is fucking weird. It's called Over the Garden Wall. It was originally a Cartoon Network. Have you seen this, Chris?
No. I just you said it's fucking weird, and then I saw the thumbnail, and I was like, okay, this is probably right up my alley, actually.
It might be. This is was on Cartoon Network. It's now on Hulu. It's 10-minute episodes. So it's basically 100 minutes, basically your average movie length. And this is from one of the creators of Adventure Time. Now, I have not seen Adventure Time, but I get the feeling that shit is fucking weird, too. And this guy also was one of the writers on SpongeBob. So, and I've seen some SpongeBob. I know that's weird. So, my brother almost never recommends things to me. And when he does, they're typically like sci-fi or really heady think piece dramas. And so he just texted me Over the Garden Wall, big recommend. And so I went in pretty much blind. And six or seven episodes in, I turned to my wife and I was like, this is really weird. I'm not sure I'm getting it. And I will also tell you, I enjoyed it more than my wife did. My wife landed more on the too weird for me side. Mm. Basically, it's about two brothers who find themselves lost in a mystical forest. And the youngest of the two is essentially Ralph Wiggum. and they run into a woodsman. They run into a cloud queen. They run into a monster. They run into a bluebird, voiced by Melanie Lynskey. Elijah Wood is one of the voices. You're also going to have Christopher Lloyd is in here. And John Cleese. Chris Isaac, of all people, is a voice in this. Really eclectic, strange, completely off my radar. But I couldn't stop thinking about it after I watched it. And it's freaking weird, but I liked it. And it's my mm-hmm. small recommend for the week. So there you go. Mm.
Yeah, I may have to give this a look because I do like I wouldn't say that I like everything on Adult Swim or whatever that has come out. This was, you said Cartoon Network, though. This yep. wasn't Adult Swim. But yeah, I generally like these really weird type of cartoons. I think those are really fun. So I have to give that a look.
Yeah, it's I would probably enjoy it. I can't find myself, like, I try to start regular show and like all these cartoons that I know I'll enjoy, and there's just something about it. I'm just like, I think I'd rather watch this, you know, other reality show or whatever, and I just can't pull the trigger on these things. But I bet I'd love them. I bet they'd be a lot of fun.
Aaron, you have a small recommend?
I sure do. Finally got around to watching Personal Shopper from a few years ago, and I don't know what I was expecting, but this was not what I was expecting. I think this is one of the most interesting horror movies I've ever seen. Like, it is, it's a supernatural thriller. Absolutely, 100% fits that category, but tonally feels almost like a prestige-y relationship piece. And it's wild how well they make those two things go together in this. I really loved this. I was captivated. I was compelled. I like the ambiguity in it. All the way through to the end. I think the actual facts of what's going on are ambiguous, but I don't think the message is. I think the message is pretty clear about grief and the idea of things that haunt us. Just plays throughout the movie, and of course Kristen Stewart's great. This is one I really, really like, so I thought I'd give it a shout out.
I was probably in a bad mood when I watched this. I saw this in theaters, and by the end of it I was like, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. This is not good. But I've heard nothing but praise for this movie since it came out. So I'm probably the asshole here. So, you know, it's one of those type of things where I need to watch it again and under different circumstances. Because a lot of times watching a movie in a theater with a bunch of people around, that's enough of a distraction to get you off your game when you're watching something. So I need to give this another chance for sure.
I might have just loved it because Kristen Stewart's in it, and that's, I'm already in the bag when she's in the movie. But I only saw it once and I was not expecting any supernatural shit. I was quite surprised by it.
Somebody in the chat asking where you can see it. It's at some of the free streaming places like Plex and Canopy and those kind of places. You can stream it there. So if you're looking for it and don't have it on VOD.
So last week I recommended Edward Zwick's book, and during the reading of that book I noticed some movies that I had not seen on his filmography before, especially the very first one that he did, which was Special Bulletin, which was a made for TV movie that came out in 1982, 83, somewhere around there. As I said before, when I was talking about the book last week, This is yet another one of these. There was like a billion of these nuclear, you know, we're scared of the, you know, we're scared of nuclear war type of movies that came out in the 80s, and they all came out like right on top of each other. One of the most famous ones, that one with Jason Robards in it that came out, one of the most famous ones that's ever come out, came out this same year. I can't remember what it's called. But Edward Zwick, this was his first movie, and apparently he was allowed to go to, I think it was NBC, and watch how a news broadcast was conducted and everything, and from all these from all that, he was able to come up with this, which is a, you know, it's a story of a reporter. Basically, it's told much like, it's just told like a news program, a breaking news program. It's not told like a movie at all. Basically, there's someone who, there's a reporter who is there about a dock strike, and then something happens while he's covering the dock strike where he ends up getting kidnapped on this tugboat by these two men who claim to have a nuclear bomb themselves. And this is like off the coast of South Carolina or something like that. And they bring this newsman onto the boat, and then they have to, the people at the station have to figure out how to, they want this news guy to broadcast their demands. So they try to get, you know, the station in on that, to like try to figure out how to do a remote from this tugboat and everything. And basically it comes down to, the U.S. must destroy all of their nuclear weapons, or we're going to blow this one up off the coast of South Carolina right now. And so a lot of the story is of course, the human story of the hostages, and then the, is there, do they really have a nuclear bomb on this tugboat? That's one of the things that they have to try to figure out. And after a while, as they get deeper and deeper into the movie, you start realizing it's very possible that they have a real nuclear device on this boat. And so the fascination of this is watching a movie which is just a special report the whole time. It seems like a news thing. In fact, Edward Zwick wanted to do this like the War of the Worlds broadcast that Orson Welles was infamous for, and not tell anybody that this was a movie.
Oh, man.
And then just have it look like a regular news broadcast. But apparently, the powers that be at the station said, nope, we're going to say this is a movie, so, you know, deal with it.
That was the right call. Gotta admit it.
The day after is the other movie that I was thinking of. Thank you, Chad.
Oh, movie scarred me.
Yeah, I think I remember you telling me that, Jeremy, that movie. And there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot that came out in this era, and I've heard of some really horrifying.
Well, and if you grow up Christian, they got their own whole set of scary to death movies about the mark of the beast and getting decapitated with a guillotine. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then you have to get that message broadcast to you by Take Six.
The 80s were full of fear.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get on to our big recommend, which is Miracle. And this is Jeremy's choice.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
So, Jeremy, take us away on Miracle.
Miracle. We open on a montage of news position that sets the scene squarely during the Cold War. We see Nixon talking about not being a crook. We get some details about how dominant the Soviets have been in the Olympics and the space race between our two countries. The Coneheads are on TV. That'll be important later. Gerald Ford is sworn in, and then Jimmy Carter, and basically it's we didn't start the fire, but it does an effective job of explaining how badly America was hurting and in need of something to pull them all together. Then we meet Herb Brooks as he's being recruited to coach the next U.S. Olympic hockey team. And he says all the wrong things, and this establishes that Herb is a man who speaks his mind and knows what he thinks and doesn't shy away from it. He wants to change everything about how USA hockey trains and how they play the game. He feels he's suggested too many changes, so when he returns home, he tells his wife he's not their guy. But that night, during a costume party being held in June, he gets the call that he got the job. We then cut ahead to the tryouts in Colorado as the nation's best college hockey players arrive. We meet some of the aspiring players, and we learn that maybe these colleges are such rivals that team chemistry could be a problem. The tryouts appear grueling, very physical, and the players are very hard on each other. Brooks then chooses his final roster before the first day of tryouts is even over, exasperating basically everyone, even more so because he hasn't chosen many of the best players, statistically speaking. At a bar later, the players celebrate by drinking beers. Not all of them are old enough to be drinking, but it's 1979, so whatever. Here we also learn that O'Callaghan thinks that McClanahan cheap-shotted him in the college championship 3 years prior, and he still has a huge grudge. You'd be forgiven if you confuse O'Callaghan and McClanahan throughout the movie, as I do. Ruzioni tries to calm things down, but O'Callaghan feels betrayed. Later, in practice, O'Callaghan cheap-shots McClanahan, and it starts a fight, which Herb Brooks allows to continue for a bit. Then he gives a speech about how they need to be a team, and not about where they used to be from. But the team will not learn a lesson just yet, because when he asks them to say their names and who they play for, they all name their colleges, which is human nature. Later, Brooks confronts Craig, one of his goalies, Jim Craig, about why he refused to take the test he gave all the players. He pushes all the right buttons to begin Craig's journey to letting it go on the ice. As he leaves, he throws the test in the trash in front of Jim Craig. We then see Herb be a dick to his wife by flatly refusing to even consider helping to pick up the kids the next day. As they argue, we learn that she is mad that he never even asked if she was willing to go on the journey of him coaching the Olympic team and how it might impact their family. Herb goes back to his office, but now is too conflicted to watch hockey. Instead, he digs around and finds his own old hockey photos. This tells us that Herb is driven by his own past failure with U.S. hockey. He goes in and apologizes to his wife for not having asked her, and then says, "I'm asking you now." It's far too late, but she agrees. We then get one of the most hallowed and precious of all movie scenes, a training montage. Here we learn how physically demanding Herb is of his players, but also that they refuse still to acknowledge that they play for Team USA, and they keep responding to Herb's repeated questions saying they play for their college teams. After he diagrams a play and walks off, the players share that none of them know what the hell he was talking about. His assistant coach, the great Noah Emmerich, questions if they can push the players this hard for this long, but Herb is dismissive. The team then travels to Norway for a game. During the game, Herb overhears his players looking for the hottest girls in the stands and not remotely focused on the game that they are playing. And that, my friends, was a huge mistake. After the game, he puts the team on the ice for more skating wind sprints, which I guess, according to the internet, they called Herbies. I don't know. At that point in time, Herbie was a little car that was magical in my mind. I just call them skating wind sprints. Herb makes them do it over and over and over until they are literally sick. And finally, Ruzioni yells out his name, and when asked who he plays for, he says the United States of America instead of naming his college team. At that point, Herb ends the punishment. And this scene, I think is interesting, was shot with the actors for 12-hour days for 3 days because the director wanted that exhaustion to be absolutely real. And that is insane. Mm-hmm. After the team plane hits a moose in the airport, Herb sees on the television that the Russian national team has just schooled a team full of NHL all-stars. He then begins showing his team film on the Russians. We then get another glorious training montage, continuing to show how brutal it is. We see a few cuts get made of players we've not gotten to know. We see the players starting to understand Herb's diagrams, starting to work together and bond as teammates. But then, a new outside player arrives, ruffling the current player's feathers. During a locker room chat, we learn Herb's 1960 team won the gold medal, but Herb had been sent packing just before the games began. And they suggest he will do anything, including bringing in a new player, at the last minute in order to win the gold medal. When that player performs really well for the team, we see the other players start to worry. And after the game, they confront the coach and ask him to send the new guy home to preserve team chemistry. I think it's important to note here that O'Callaghan and McClanahan, former enemies, are both here in solidarity together. And Herb says, "This guy can help us, and I'm going to send him home." We next get what is reported to be the most fictionalized scene in the movie, where Herb attends the players' Christmas party, and they're all drinking beer again, and shows uncharacteristic kindness by simply not being an asshole for one night. As he drives home listening to a Jimmy Carter speech about the American spirit, we see the players bonding over snowy football, and an implied Kenny Loggins song. It's a small miracle none of them catches pneumonia. Herb returns home to find that his kids left the star for him after decorating the tree while he was gone. After a practice, we see the coach cut Ralph Cox, basically the only player we ever got to know that gets cut, and it kind of hurts because it's kind of supposed to. This is basically a surrogate Herb here. Herb is doing to this guy what had been done to him. Next, Herb has the team scheduled to play the Russians in an exhibition game in Madison Square Garden, and they are absolutely obliterated and embarrassed, which again is probably what Coach Herb was hoping for because he's a mad genius. Also, the Russian team, is, I should note, is coached by Rip Torn's long-lost Russian brother. After the game, Herb visits the injured Jack O'Callaghan and comforts him by saying basically nothing and patting him on the shoulder. On the way out, he pushes Jim Craig's buttons by telling him he's thinking of sitting him down. Jim argues, but Herb pushes back, saying Jim is holding back part of his talent. Jim then mocks the psychology tests, only for Herb to bark, "I want to see the kid in the net who wouldn't take the test." And again, master manipulator. Herb has to choose to replace O'Callaghan completely or leave him on the roster but not be able to use him until the medal rounds due to his injury. Herb chooses to keep him. McClanahan is injured with a thigh bruise in the opening game of the Olympics against Sweden, and Herb pushes him to keep playing anyway, even though the doctor and everybody else is like, maybe he shouldn't, but the doctor does admit he can't hurt his bruise anymore, it's just going to hurt. And again, Herb's just pushing buttons, and McClanahan goes back out the next period and makes a key big hit. The team then pulls the goalie and rallies to tie the game. And there's something here where the assistant coach, Patrick, has put Baker on the current line without Herb knowing, and then Herb asks about Baker, but then at the end gives credit to Patrick for putting him in. I wish the movie was a little clearer here because it's kind of fast and confusing, and I feel like that assistant coach character deserves a full moment there to make a good call without Herb knowing. But anyway, that is what I believe happened, is that he made that call without Herb knowing, and Herb appreciated it. The only thing better than a training montage is a tournament montage. So we then cut to after they've beaten Czechoslovakia, then they play Norway and win, then we get a quick press conference where Herb refuses to let the media talk to any players. Then they beat Romania. Herb again refuses to let the players speak to the media, and the media accuses Herb of wanting the spotlight for himself. Next, the team takes down West Germany, and holy shit, it's easy to forget there used to be two Germanys. At that point, they are in the medal round and will next face the Russians. Instead of Herb himself, only assistant coach Patrick attends the press conference, again showing that Herb cares about winning, not the press and not the spotlight, just winning the games. Finally, his family arrives and he can, quote unquote, enjoy hot chocolate with his wife while the kids skate, which is basically him still thinking about hockey while in the presence of his family members because Herb is a robot. I could make a good case that this movie is about what sports pressure in this country does to us as people, but I'm not going to go down that road. Before the big game against Russia, Herb gives an all-timer of a locker room speech, and if the real Herb speech was even 10% this inspiring, it would still be an all-timer. He doesn't use psychological tricks. He uses honesty. You guys would lose 9 out of 10 games to these guys, but you're going to win this one. He uses math. On the right night, with the right style of play, they can beat any team. And I get goosebumps every time I watch this speech when he says, "Go out there and take it," and just calmly strolls out. Nothing else needs to be said. I love how the pregame portion of the film uses what looks like real video and probably real words from the actual televised pregame. It's hard for me to know what's been re-recorded by Al Michaels and what wasn't. But that game, they had to do a lot of explaining because 80, 90% of their viewers were not hockey fans. They were there to watch Team USA take on Russia. And so the movie has the same dilemma. A lot of the people watching the movie aren't hockey fans, so we have to sort of explain why this is such a big deal and exactly how big this giant is that our David is going up against. The Soviets start off fast and hard, looking unbeatable, playing a little bit dirty and scoring first. But the U.S. players don't give up, and Herb sends O'Callaghan on the ice during a rush, and OC creates a turnover, and they score to even it up. The Soviets, though, answer back and retake the lead. Those plucky Yanks, with another perfectly timed substitution, though, tie the game with 1 second left in the period. Somehow, Team USA does not get completely full of themselves between periods, even though we don't see how, as we jump straight to the start of period two. The Russians have swapped out their goalie, which is widely viewed as a mistake, because that was the best goalie in all of the world, and Herb points out to his team, "Best goalie in the world, and you guys just put him on the bench." The Soviets strike first in the second period after knocking down Jim Craig on another seemingly dirty play. There is concern Craig is injured, but apparently he is fine. We then jump to the third period, probably because no more scoring happened in the rest of the second period. On a power play, 5 minutes into the period, the U.S. scores again to tie the game back up. It's a tight game from there, with both teams having chances, until team captain Mike Ruzioni is fed the puck on a breakaway, and he buries it. The U.S. has the lead. From there, it's nail-biting defense the rest of the game. Herb keeps his team on extremely short 30 or 40-second shifts so as to always have fresh legs, while the Soviets keep their better lines out for longer and get tired. The Soviet coach, having apparently never been in a losing position, does not pull his goalie. Jim Craig denies all the Soviets' attempts, and the crowd reaches fever pitch, and just before the last few seconds tick down, Al Michaels' famous call rings out, "There will be miracles when you believe." No, he says, "Do you believe in miracles?" "Yes!" And it's a great classic call that probably helps this become one of the great sports moments of all time and helps make this movie happen. While everyone celebrates, Herb leaves the ice to celebrate privately in the arena hallway and have a light cry. Much like history does, the movie then glosses over the fact that the team still had to beat Finland to actually win the gold medal, which they did. And that, my friends, is Miracle. Aaron, Chris?
Yeah, I love this movie. I have a different perspective now, seeing it this time, than when I saw it the first time. The first time, I was all about the USA, USA, and just the what it meant to the country, and just, oh, look at that amazing coach doing amazing coaching things, and all that kind of stuff. And as I've aged, I've found different perspectives on coaching styles, different ideas on what it means to love this country, what it means to be patriotic. Like, you know, those things, as you grow older, you start to, for me at least, evolve. Those things evolve. So it's interesting watching it with these eyes. I still think it's a great movie. It does exactly what it intends to do. I just had some cognitive dissonance with some of the coaching stuff, with, you know, putting your players in danger to make a point, you know, like all that kind of stuff is, you know, I don't know. It's that whole excellence thing. It's the reason I was, you know, I don't think I'll be stealing Chris's double feature, but I briefly considered Whiplash as a double feature to this, because it's the other side of this idea that it takes that kind of, you know, pushing to achieve excellence. Now, of course, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, as it usually is, that there is a level of pushing that needs to happen for us to exceed what we think are our boundaries. But then there's also the difference between, you know, how that happens, how that discipline happens, those kind of things. So it's interesting to have those thoughts during a movie that I just blatantly, easily loved the first, you know, few times that I saw it. I think another thing I noticed this time through is, as much credit as Al Michaels gets, I still think he's underappreciated. He is so good at his job. And I did go back and watch the original. Chris, you were talking about it, having watched it last week. And I was like, I think I want to do that. Now, I didn't watch the whole game, but I did watch like important parts that are shown in the movie and different things like that. And he is so good in every situation. And they even show the part at the beginning, like, most people don't know the difference between a blue line and a clothesline.
Yeah.
And that's irrelevant tonight. And yeah, it's just so perfect. And I am just a huge fan of people who can communicate that way, communicate well, and say, you know, efficiently, you know, what the truth of the moment is. Really, really cool. I think this movie is funny. I think there's a really great sense of humor here. One of my pickups this time through was when he's on the phone. He's like, the plane apparently hit a moose. And he's like, no, the moose is fine, but we got to just make sure the plane's all right. I hadn't caught that before. I just thought that was hilarious. And speaks to the travel that you do in hockey. I love the scene between him and his wife for a couple reasons. I think it gives her some real moments to say, you know, I've been ignored in this process. And when she says, oh, we had a conversation about it. Did I have some good things to say?
Yeah.
I was just like, that is so real. That is so perfect. And speaks to something. I also like that the movie didn't need to drag that to the end of the movie, right? Like it has this subplot between them that actually starts earlier when she says something about we're going somewhere during the summer, you know, and he just kind of ignores it.
Yeah.
But then after that, they're a team. They're together. And he understands, you know, in the movie how to incorporate her as a part of this process in a better way, in a more healthy way. So I like that. I think movies now tend to try to solve everything at the end. And so, you know, we don't see a lot of plots getting wrapped up in the middle of the movie like
that. A lesser movie would have had her forgive him because he won. Right?
Like, yeah.
At the end, a lesser movie would have been like, oh, I get it now. It was that important to him. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing is just watching the original game. It's fun to see how they changed the dramatic parts a little bit more. Like that goal at the end of the quarter does happen right at the end of the quarter, but there's a couple things there. Like the substitution isn't obvious on the broadcast, and the way they score that goal is a little different than the way they score it here. Mm. And then also the Russian coach complaining about there being 0 seconds left is totally different in the real game. They left the ice. They thought the quarter was over. They weren't complaining about the goal going in. They had to come back because they put a second back on the clock to redrop the puck for that last second. So there's a little bit of, as you expect, dramatization that happens in those moments. But I love it. I really love the movie. It's really a fun watch.
I was kind of fascinated because Chris watched it a few days before I did and was talking on Slack about some of the Al Michaels stuff was redubbed and some of it was original audio.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm watching the movie a few days after that and reading IMDb about how in many of these character cases, they cast hockey players and then taught them to act. Only a few of them were actors like Eddie Cahill, who had been on Friends, who plays Jim Craig. And ironically, he gets body doubled more than any of the other actors because he's not a hockey player. And I wondered if some of the reason they redid Al Michaels' audio was because, like, I did read that Gavin O'Connor wanted the hockey to feel real, to be real. And that's why he cast hockey players, so we don't get this Mighty Ducks super tight shot kind of bullshit. And I wonder if in some cases the puck just bounced different than it was scripted and they needed a call to explain why the puck bounced over there or who touched it. Because the hockey is that unpredictable. You can't exactly script, okay, you're going to pass it to him right exactly at this moment and he's going to be in this spot because it's fast moving. It's hockey.
I think that could be part of it. I honestly think it's probably just the audio fidelity. I honestly think that original call probably doesn't exist because you even see them when they go to the original call, they have to transition the quality of the audio down. And so what they do, this is I noticed this because of what you were saying about the call, Chris. What they do is they cut to somebody watching it on a little transistor TV so that we now, our brain goes, oh, we're hearing the lesser quality from that as they transition into the actual call. It's really smart the way they do it. But I do think a lot of it had to do with audio quality probably.
Yeah, my guess. Maybe, but I'd prefer it that way, you know, just,
sure,
just to have the original call. Although Al Michaels still does a really good job doing the redos and everything here. Hockey, by the way, is an unbelievable sport for people to do announcing on for me. Like the speed of it, the best one in my entire time watching hockey, it was Doc Emmerich. That guy just found, like, I don't to think about where the puck is going, how fast this game is and everything, and him keep up with all the players and where it's going and what's happening and all of that. It was nobody better than that, and he retired, which you know good for him. He needs to retain it, you know. He needed a break, you know, but my God, man, he was so good. By the way, it's period, Aaron, not quarter.
Yeah, I know.
Quarter suggests that there are four and there's only three.
Yeah.
So, you know, get off your high horse. Yeah, what?
It's technically a third. It was the end of the first third.
Yes, exactly. There's a lot. I wish I had written down my thoughts because I didn't. I did not write down my thoughts, so I have a bunch, and I'm just like gonna have to get to them as I go. But away from the movie, to start off, I know that's a really good thing. I'm gonna start off by talking about something that is not the movie, but they show. They show the Soviets win in basketball. I believe it's in 1972. This was a huge, like, this was kind of like the same thing, a parallel, because the Americans were so dominant in basketball for so long. And then in 72, I believe, the Russians won the gold medal game. And one of the things about that, if you've ever heard the story about that, that had three different endings. Like two different times, the Russians went down to score a basket and failed. But because of some sort of technicality, they always had to bring it back, put more time on the clock, and then give them another chance to score. And they did it on the third try. This is after the Americans, by the way, went out onto the court and had celebrated it twice and all this other type of stuff had happened. And then the third time they score the basket, game over. And from what I understand, a lot of it had to do with referees who didn't speak the same language to each other. They couldn't communicate a lot of things to each other. They're trying to communicate to the two sides what's going on in a very poor fashion. So that had left a bitter taste in the Americans' mouths. They didn't even go to get their silver medals.
Oh, wow.
I think it's still in a safe somewhere. They never picked those up. So just sort of another little layer to this that leads up to Miracle, because the Soviets have won so many in a row at this point. Mm-hmm. The idea of the Americans winning is so beyond. One thing that I wish I don't think movies have this capability, honestly, unless you just want to become a little bit more technical. I wish that they had told more about the style that they were playing and how they were going to beat these teams and everything, because in the movie, and this is your Disney all-American bullshit coming through here, you just got to work hard and you got to punish yourself and then you'll be good somehow. And I don't think it has anything to do with that. Now, they do those little things in there, like substituting somebody at the end. And I really love that last minute or so where Brooks is sitting there going, "When they do this, I want to put this, that, I want to do that. And when they do this, I want to do that," and all that. That was my, like, my mojo right there. when the coach is actually telling them an actual way of winning, instead of like, "Oh, they worked so hard and they're so conditioned and all this other stuff," which, yeah, that helps. It's not going to help you. It's not going to beat the Russians. You've got to have a scheme. And so, like, I wish there was a little bit more in that. Still, it's done very well.
At least they didn't do the flying V.
Yeah, the flying V. At least this wasn't a bunch of ragtag skaters who are terrible at hockey, and then they just get one guy, and all of a sudden they're the greatest team in the world. Another thing that I was thinking about on this is Kurt Russell, who almost a friend of the show at this point, because we've done at least three of his movies now, and all of those roles are different. The Thing, Breakdown, Miracle, they're all different. The guy can do anything, and I think I feel like he's underrated, even though I think he's just a kind of a go-to guy that he's probably got over 100 credits at this point. And everything. This was a weird period in time where he was doing Disney movies. Ed Miracle and Sky High, I think, was right after this.
And
whatever.
That's a completely different role too. Yeah,
another completely different role. I really, really dig Kurt Russell in this. Patricia Clarkson has way more to do in this than she did in The Untouchables, another one that we had a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I was glad about that, except for the fact that every conversation when she gets mad, she says something and it's like a period, and then she always walks out of the room. And it's like, can we have just a normal conversation that ends? Does she always punctuate it and then just leave the room? What else was there that I wanted to say about this? I don't know anymore. Anyway, I really like this movie. And I'm glad that you picked it, and it's a good conditioning thing. Oh my god, that thing with the the sprints or whatever. Now, there's a terrible term called suicides for these things that they're doing. I don't know what they call them now, but that's one of those things where I don't know if there's anybody who's confused about what's going on there, but you take a rink or a basketball court, which is where I did these things, mm-hmm. and you go to one line and then back, and then you go to midcourt and then back, and then you go to the third line on the other side and then back, and then you go the full way and then back. And this was getting into territory like, what's that experiment where they had the people go in and press buttons and they'd shock people and like, terrible. You know, yeah, they'd shock people and like that they're like, well, no, you got to give them more juice this time or whatever. And people just kept doing it because they were appealing to authority and everything like that. That's what I feel like with watching Noah Emmerich during this scene with the whistle. Man. Because Brooks is like, again, and he has that whistle, and he's like, I don't want to do this. This is too much. I did these things back in high school, like not skating, mind you. This was running. And I was not nearly in the shape that these guys were. And I threw up after like a few of them. And to think that they're sitting there doing this for hours, I'm like, my God, man, this is a special form of torture. And I don't know if you guys had like – read into this, if this is something that happened or not, but
it happened. At least on IMDb, it said it happened. It wasn't like in the movie, like it didn't stop when somebody said, I play for the USA, but
stopped when a player got angry and smashed his stick against the goal.
That's what it was.
Oh,
yeah.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Okay.
And that's what I'm talking about with that cognitive dissonance thing. It's like, that's not necessarily healthy, right? Like, is that a good thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. So here's the thing. I agree with you, but I think you're looking at this with 2025 eyes.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
As Chris is pointing out, those kind of wind, we call them wind sprints.
Line drills is what we called them. But yeah.
I did that in school and I got sick and threw up, like Chris is saying. Mm-hmm. So I don't think Brooks was putting these guys through something.
Oh, no.
That all kids in America weren't going through at some point if they played a sport.
Right.
But I do think that it's fair to look at it with 2025 eyes and say, yeah, that shouldn't be happening anymore. But you know, have to remember it's a period piece. So and the other one with making him go back out there on the bruise, I don't have as big a problem with that one because I think that happens in regular hockey yesterday, probably, where somebody had a bruise
and
the coach was like, get back out there.
Yeah, that happens in sports all the time.
It's just a bruise, yeah.
Right, right.
So I think it's fair to criticize and say he was probably too harsh in areas and methods, but I think it was fairly akin to what was happening around the country with sports teams.
Absolutely. This was definitely something that was going on for sure. I was just saying that watching his assistant with that whistle I feel like I feel more bad for him for some reason, even though it's really the players I should be worried about.
He's
just sitting there going, I don't want to do this. I don't want to. Oh my God, this is so bad. It's also funny to me too. And I guess if this really happened that, you know, the problem, the reason why they're doing this is because they weren't paying attention during the game. People on the bench were sitting there like, oh, there's the prettiest girl, and oh no, there's the prettiest girl, and so on and so forth. And then, you know, you have Mike Ruzioni at the end of all this saying, you know, I play for the United States of America. And I'm like, don't get me wrong, I love this scene, but I don't know how it solves the problem that Coach Brooks was trying to go after. Because the problem was they weren't paying attention during the game. I don't think they're ever told why they're going out there.
And
the fact that Ruzioni comes out and says, I play for the United States of America, well, the other 19 guys might still be playing for the University of Minnesota. That's why they make him captain, I guess. But I'm like, there's a lot of like weird disconnects in that scene for me.
Well, in the movie,
even though I love it.
By having Ruzioni do that, the movie is absolving Brooks of having used yes, that method.
Exactly.
It's softening that. I think it's probably intentional because if it ends in the movie the way it ended in real life, then nobody learned anything. He just smashed his stick and Brooks was like, oh, I'm an asshole. Everybody get off the ice. Let's go home. Nothing was learned.
Well, it's all a bit of movie making revisionist kind of history idea, which we do with these kind of stories all the time. It's the same with bringing in the guy, you know, to play for them or whatever. And the movie paints it out that this was like this master manipulative plan that, you know, got the team to, you know, be together. Well, that could go a million different ways.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, he could have been in the moment actually considering putting this person on the team. But the movie needs it to be this genius, you know, thing that he did. And, you know, you listen to some of the things that some of the players have said, like in the trivia and that kind of stuff. And I haven't done like real research on this, but like as far as like the trivia on IMDb and those kind of things. And they're like, the movie's pretty true, except he's more of a jerk. That's basically
I think there's even a couple of them that are like, well, we respected him, but I wouldn't say we liked him. Like,
yeah,
that's why that Christmas scene is so out of place for the actual real people. They're like, yeah, I know he never came and hung out with us and did Christmas presents and gave us nicknames. Like, that was not him.
Yeah. That kind of reminds me too of the story about Rudy, because Joe Montana was like, was very up, very against the movie Rudy and everything. And you know, like that guy didn't do it. Nobody cared about this guy. And then they make a whole movie out of him, you know? That's the thing though I like about the movie too, where they had the doctor has a conversation with Noah Emmerich in there, and Noah Emmerich's like, did you ever see anything like this when he's over when he's at Minnesota? And they're like, nope, I've never seen him be this way ever once. And he's like, maybe he's trying to get them all to hate him instead of hating each other, you know, which is, you know, of course, which is the thing that he does in this. I do love that realization that Noah Emmerich has on his face once he sits there and thinks about it and chews on it for a second and everything. So I thought that was really fun. And by the way, Castroff said the Milgram experiment mm-hmm. was the one that I was thinking about. Yes, that is correct. That's the one. It's a good movie. It's got its usual things that you're just like, hey, I kind of want to pick at that, but in the end, it's great. I mean, this actually did happen. They actually did win these games and blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, and it sounds like, according to you guys, fairly close to the real thing, except for a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, all right, let's get on with our super secret double feature, and we'll start off with Aaron.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Shh. Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
I thought about, do I go with a hockey movie? Do I go with a sports movie? Do I, you know, go with another against all odds movie? There's some different ways to go here. I did settle on sports, and I think the reason is because I think this movie speaks to something in sports that is so meaningful to people, which is this, it channels this thing we have about – tribalism, which can be so negative and impact people in negative ways, but it channels it in a way that can be fun and positive. You know, the idea of sports to me is kind of a healthy way to cope with the need to war. You know what I mean? Like, there's this the kind of thing that, that we have. And so so I did end up going with a sports movie, and I wanted to bring some light to it. This movie is very similar to a movie called The Boys in the Boat that just came out very, very recently. Involves the Olympics, involves a coach who's brought in to do things a little bit different, and involves an against-all-odds team. If you don't know the true story, this is about how they took the JV squad on rowing to the Olympics from, and I forget the school is because I don't have it up in front of me, and what happened then when they, spoiler alert, did very, very well. So it is really good. Clooney's great. It just kind of slipped by. It just kind of happened at the end of the year, and not a lot of people saw it, but it really fits Miracle well. Feels very, very similar. So, yeah.
That is a thing, by the way. We didn't really touch on it. The fact that this same Russian squad played NHL All-Stars and destroyed them. And then we get a bunch of college kids who, of course, they get destroyed too at first. But then they come back. This is another reason why I wish I could have seen more scheme involved than just, oh, we're hardworking, whatever. But it's kind of amazing, like, that type of thing. Like, taking a JV squad and making them world class. What is this? Is I think that's the true essence of Miracle, by the way, is like there's a point where he's already picked the team. They say you're losing some of the best players, and he's like, I don't want the best players, I want the right players. And I think what that means is that sometimes the best players come in and make it about themselves, and they want to and to have too many egos at once, everybody wants to show everybody else how good they are, then you lose the concept of team and all that. And so that's sort of what I feel about this. There's you got to have people who think in a team, think of this as a team and not just as I'm good.
Yeah, and that is the central theme of The Boys in the Boat too, is that he is putting together a team, not just the best rowers from a bunch of different teams. I do want to clarify, George Clooney directed it in case it sounded like he was acting in it. It is actually Joel Edgerton that plays the coach, but this was Clooney's directorial movie from a couple years ago.
I still need to see this.
He has the strangest directorial career. I'm sorry, this is not the time for that. He does.
It's for sure. No doubt about it. A lot of spans a lot of genres and kind of like, I'm kind of interested in this. I'll direct that.
Yep.
You know, kind of thing. And he's got like movies that are like super Oscar contenders, and then he's got others that are like goofball comedies, and then you know, stuff like that. I also went along the sporting tack, and I was thinking about other movies where, you know, they bring in someone and it organizes a whole thing, but I just never could pull the trigger on it. Stuff like Lean on Me, came to mind on this, where they get a principal Joe Clark to come into this really rough high school, and his rough and tough ways are what gets everybody back in line and everything. And I also thought of the movie Dave, because there's a, you know, they bring in this double for the actual president who actually has ideals and everything. The stuff he does in Dave is obviously something you would not be able to accomplish in real life, but someone who's actually like, I've got practical solutions for all of this stuff. You know, now we're going to do that type of thing, and, you know, whatever. So I even thought about that. But in the end, the movie's DNA is Hoosiers. Everything about this is Hoosiers. You have Hoosiers suffers a little bit from that whole, like, this team isn't really good, but then you put one guy on it and they're amazing all of a sudden. It has that kind of thing. They don't really go in depth to show you what's good about the other players in Hoosiers. They just, like, you know, they just get this Jimmy guy in, and he's suddenly the glue that they need for this ragtag team that only has seven players total on it and everything. But But the you know, the coach Dale, played by Gene Hackman, is the guy who comes in, and he's got the same sort of rough and gruff style. And but you can actually see in Hoosiers what he's trying to accomplish in that. You know, he wants people passing and passing, and you know, he wants to get the open shot and all that type of stuff. And it's not just working really, really super hard, which you have to do, but you know, there's actual like scheme in that one or whatever. But Hoosiers, you know, there's a reason why that's an all-time classic. So I'm gonna
yes, there is.
I almost you got me thinking about other choices I passed up when you were talking about finding that movie that has, you know, the guy comes in and, you know, against all odds. 300 was another one I actually considered for a little bit as a double feature with Miracle.
Yeah.
Well, the Bad News Bears does that too, right? There's one guy shows up who's really good and the team's suddenly green.
Basically, they get Tatum O'Neal, who's a good pitcher, and then they get Jackie Earle Haley to come in, and he's like the best hitter that they can come up with. Basically, they have two good players, and then they just come in, and I don't think they win though in the end. That's one of those 70s sports movies.
I haven't seen it forever.
Where they actually lose at the end, but it's the friends they made along the way, the whole thing. All right. So what do we have next week? I believe it's Aaron's turn. So give it to us.
We will continue our series on the psychology of the United States of America. We were in the days before Kennedy's assassination with A Perfect World. We were at the Olympics just recently, and we're going to head to the space race with Apollo 13.
This is so good.
Damn.
So, yeah, another true story that, captured the heartbeat of a nation. So, it's got Tom Hanks. So it's got to be good.
Oh, man, this movie's so good, man. I'm going to save it for next week, but this is one of those movies when I was a projectionist that I went in to watch all the time. Mm-hmm. I watched the ending of this movie a million times. This is going to be one of those fun, familiar beat movies where I'm just going to be like, this is a nice thing to have on right now. And
just from the way I've talked movies with you for the last however long we've known each other, 25 years, I would probably say this is in your top 20, 25. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so for sure.
Yeah.
And and also, just as a brief thing, this is one of the most accurate real-life movies. They obviously did some things, but anyway, we'll get to it next week. I can't wait to go over that.
Netflix, for those of you looking for where to watch it, and I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I was just going to say, from the 90s, one of the oldest movies on Netflix. not a joke.
Before we sign off, too, I'm going to go back to that basketball game again. The one of the things that happened at the end, so when the Soviets won that game, I believe it was Hank Iba was the coach of the United States, walked out onto the court wondering what the hell just happened. And somebody goes up and lifts his wallet while he goes out onto the court. Dude, seriously, look that story up.
That's amazing.
It's amazing how much stuff goes on in that Soviet-U.S. basketball game. Anyway.
Awesome.
That's going to do it for this week. Once again, chat, thank you so much for coming out and watching us and enduring technical difficulties, as Richard Dawson says in The Running Man. But thank you so much for coming out, and we'll do Apollo 13 next week, so we'll see you next time.
See you guys.
See ya. Bye. Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
All right. Let's do this thing with the thing and the what and the stuff. Iphigenia, Doubtfire. It was a drive-by fruiting. Did you see that? There's a clip that somebody sent me on Instagram a week ago. I think it was Patrick. And it was Charles Barkley and a bunch of other analysts. And Barkley's telling the story about in the 80s, they used to fly commercial. They didn't fly private. And he said you had to wash your jersey in the shower the night after the game.
Oh, my.
And through the course of this conversation, basically kind of comes out that he thought everyone was doing that.
Oh,
he'd
come no.
Down to the hotel room, and he'd get into his shower in his uniform and shower. And that was the way he laundered his uniform for the next game. And in the course of this discussion, it came out that no one did that. No one was doing that, Charles. What the fuck?
That's the thing that always pisses me off when they talk about, oh, this guy never won a championship or whatever. It's like, well, you have to beat the most dominant player in the position, dominant team, and you know, like that's going on at the time. And it's hard to win. There's only one team that's going to win.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can't find a way, like they keep saying that about certain teams. Like I remember, like going to hockey again, the Predators, like Predators have been to the playoffs such and such a many times, and they've only been to the Stanley Cup once. Well, yeah, that's a valid criticism in some ways, but you have to be the dominant team. They've never once been the dominant team. They had the most points in one year, but that was kind of, they never felt like the best team in the league.
Wasn't that also the year that we went out and picked up Paul Kariya and shit? Like,
no. The most points was like a few years ago. Like when they won the, what is it? What do you call it when you win have the most points?
President's Cup?
President's Cup. They won that. That was the year after their Stanley Cup, which where they went from the 8 seed to go all the way to the Stanley Cup. They were never the dominant team, and they would make the playoffs because so many teams make the playoffs, like half the league makes the playoffs. So to criticize a team for not winning the Stanley Cup just because they've been to the playoffs a number of times, I'm sorry, if you're not the dominant team. If you're a dominant team and you're losing all the time, then there's some criticism.
Yeah, like if Tom Brady had gone to 9 Super Bowls and lost them all.
Yeah, exactly. That's a different discussion.
I'm going to give the Tiger Woods Technology Golf League another shot tonight.
Was it terrible?
Well, everybody that liked it, from what I have read, said it got a lot better in the second hour and when I was no longer watching. So they did these like wrestling style intros where they're like, Bodring Harrington!
Oh, even no.
He's not there. And then it's just a stupid white guy in a polo kind of strolling out casually.
No.
And I really like the technology of the green, how it can re-undulate and spin and reform itself. But the actual surface of the green is so fast that I think what I need to do is just recategorize this in my brain as golf adjacent instead of golf. And then I might enjoy it a little more if I treat it like putt-putt, for example, because every time they would putt, the ball, those balls were flying. And I was like, this is not golf. This is not golf. And anyway, Tiger's playing tonight, and I'm a Tiger fan, so I'll give it another shot. And I'm sure they'll go, Tiger Woods! And it's just, it's not that sport.
What? So you're a fan of Tiger? You mean you're a fan of adultery, Jeremy?
Yeah, love it. I love adultery. I love overusing back pain pills. I love crashing your car mysteriously and never having to answer for it.
That's the social media discourse, right?
Yeah.
It really is, dude. I was on Blue Sky and said murder is wrong, and somebody said that means I hate trans people.
Yeah, right.
That's why I'm not on Blue Sky anymore. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I more and more, as I wade back in even to Blue Sky, I just think, I don't know that the platform's the problem. I think the system is the problem. It just elevates, you know, the algorithm just elevates the extreme ideas.
Extreme opinions, yes.
It's going to happen no matter where it is. So, yeah, I think, I don't know. I think we all might just be best to communicate in our circles through text and, you know, do more long form kind of public communication if you want to, but the short form public communication just doesn't work.
Even text, though. I mean, I had a text group where one person was very vocal about dude doing the right thing, and then insurance companies kill more people than that guy has, and so on and so forth. And it's like the point is not that this person has done more. It's one of those two wrongs don't make a right type of deals. I said you're gonna have to go a really long way before I justify murder as a solution to
the glee that social media has over some of these stars losing their homes in the fire. Like Mel Gibson apparently lost his home in the fire, and Twitter was all like, ah, too bad, so sad. And I'm like, what the fuck have we become that we are so detached that because we don't like a person, we're like, yep, they had that coming. It makes no sense to me. The more I stay away from it, the better person I feel.
Yeah.
And in my little bit of I don't do very much, but in my little bit of social media stuff that I even do, I just post something about a movie if I liked it, like, hey, here's something that I liked, and then just move on, and you know, not very much engagement in that space right now, but like I don't care. It's like, you know,
yep, it'll be interesting to see how far the depths of hell reach through social media, because it's I think it's really changing people. I really do. I think that it's in many ways turning people who, you know, are just normal love people, positive people, into just the kind of people that, you know, root for others' demises. And it's just, I don't know, it's making enemies of half of our fellow humans. I don't know. It's just weird to me.
My wife sent me a thing about this professor who for 10 years or more has offered his class, if everybody agrees unanimously, you can all have a 95 on the final exam without taking it. But if just one person doesn't agree to this, then everybody has to take the thing. And they've never, in 10 years of doing this, he's never had a class unanimously decide to take the 95. And when he pulls them afterwards, the number one reason is always they feel like somebody else in the class didn't deserve the 95. Not that they didn't want the 95 themselves, they didn't want somebody else to get it because they didn't think they deserved it. That's the society we live in now.
It's rough. It really is. Yeah. Well, good times, guys.
Uplifting.
Good times.
Wait,
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.